Welcome to the Pinecast. Joining me today, excited, and everyone's still in awe, maybe a little bit hungover, and recovering from a glorious weekend as a Gooner, are Joseph at I Hate Your Club, Elliot, Yankee Gunner, and Alex at the Beck underscore, all that, the underscore Beck underscore. Anyways, gentlemen, it's been a wonderful weekend. How excited, or let's say relieved, are you to be basking in the glory of a cup victory? I'll start with you, Elliot.
Incredibly relieved. You know, the thing that crossed my mind, I think, is winning the FA Cup is a powerful reminder of why a lot of people weren't fully satisfied with top four finishes, because you don't get to celebrate fourth like we celebrated the FA Cup. I'm not taking away the achievement of finishing in the top four, qualifying for the Champions League, and everything that goes with it. But winning a trophy is winning a trophy. And realistically, unless an English team wins the Champions League, two teams get to celebrate winning a trophy at the top tier of English football every year. I mean, I guess you can include the Capital One Cup if you want, but really two major trophies, and that's the FA Cup and the league. And the way the celebrations were for the players, for the fans, for the people that got to be at Wembley or the Emirates or went to the Open Top Parade, the pictures and videos you saw from all over the world, every corner of the world, those celebrations aren't like clawing fourth place on the final day. They're the celebration of winning something, and it's a reminder that, you know, you start the season because you want to see great football and you want to be excited for big matches and you want to, you know, enjoy supporting the team all season long. But at the end of the season, what you want is you want to lift the silverware and watch the celebrations and have that warm feeling wash over you and have the chance to taunt everybody else that didn't win silverware. So for me, I think it was euphoria, it was excitement, it was a reminder of just how special the feeling is after 9 years. Obviously, it's a fuck you to everybody who's been holding that 9 years over us, but I think it's also a powerful reminder that the goal is to lift silverware, and that, you know, granted, you're not going to win silverware every year, but as important as it is to stay in the top four, winning trophies does something to the fan base and to the team that you don't get without trophies. And it's just, you know, we'll go into arson and the players and the individual performances, but whether you've been critical of the manager or not, it's a joy to see him back on top. It's what we all want. It's a joy to see the club back on top winning silver.
Yeah, it was a joyous day for everyone associated. I mean, certainly the big breath of relief, really, to just have, you know, gotten over this hump. Joseph, you joined me at the pub. We got over your pub jinx. We have won some matches with him, but the last time Joseph, well, not the last time he was there, but the last time that Joseph was at the Fox and Hounds for a cup final, it didn't go so well. So now are you going to be joining us there for every cup final here thereon, Joseph? It looks like your audio is still giving us trouble. Well, anyways, he and I had a glorious time at the pub. It was a very joyous occasion. You know, really got to revel in it with everyone. It was a really great atmosphere, you know, and look at what we saw from across the country, across the globe, really. You know, people parading around, doing all sorts of wonderful things. I saw pictures of a supporter leading his goat somewhere, in an Arsenal kit. I mean, you just saw all sorts of crazy things and pictures of just joyous Gooners everywhere and just wonderful celebrations. And it was pretty fantastic to behold. And it seemed like we had a great atmosphere, you know, everywhere without any question. Joseph, were you able to, what do you think of it? Are we still have your audio? Okay. Well, there you are.
Sorry. I don't know what's going on. All right. What was the question? I'm sorry.
Just talking about the pub experience and getting that, how it felt for you to get that monkey off our back.
Yeah. You know, I got over that. I was kind of not calm or confident. I tried to just put the final out of my mind leading up to it. And even the morning as we were driving to the pub, as I was driving to your way and then onto the pub, I was ignoring Twitter because everybody was making me nervous. I wasn't nervous when I woke up, but everybody's comments about being nervous, I just had to shut it off. But, I mean, the day was great. I mean, and as far, I mean, Elliot said many a good thing in there. I think for me, it just, I was so happy that I didn't exactly know how to react because it's been so long, and I totally forgot what it was like to really feel winning as a club. I really did. Totally forgot how it felt and how good it is to go on Twitter when things are really good because they don't really get too much better than this.
Enjoy it while you got it, right? Silly season's around the corner. People be
celebrate it,
debating in a couple days.
Talk as much smack as you want to. Retweet old tweets that dickheads that support other clubs have said you'd never win a trophy and you should shut up until you win a trophy. And I held on to one of those for about 3 months and I retweeted it as soon as I could. So I mean, it was great. It's great to have a trophy. It's great to see the players really enjoy themselves and their accomplishments. Because you're right, there really isn't much to celebrate when the fourth is all you get because there really is no trophy. It's just the opportunity at a high level again.
And for us, having played at this level for so long, it really feels like
the status quo.
Well, it's the status quo, and it's a relief. It's not something to be joyous and to celebrate. It's relief that we're maintaining this level, performing adequately enough to be there, but to actually get across the line and actually finish something, it makes a world of difference. So now, Alex, you were over in the UK and you got down to the Emirates for the match. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
It was incredible. My voice is still gone from all the screaming and shouting and the singing. When I was there, everyone was happy to be there. No one seemed nervous, like the entire of Islington. And like everyone was very, very calm. And when we got to the stadium, we were just like really happy, in a really good mood. I tried to find everyone that I could possibly talk to, and they were all really like happy and smiling. I think most of us were drunk, but
like, well, it was a joyous occasion. I mean, why not? I don't know. All right. So in the pub, the tone turned a little bit. They never turned on the team. Obviously, as we're in a cup final. But even in the pub, I mean, people got pretty nervy when we went down 2-0. What was the atmosphere like in the Emirates when we were pegged back by a couple goals that early?
When the first goal came, it was kind of funny because it was like everyone was expecting it. It was like they were so used to that kind of thing happening that it was like, okay, you know, it was like we're going to. But the minute the first goal went in, I kept telling everyone around me, like, we're gonna win this, no matter what happens. When the second goal came in, I was like, we're still gonna win, but I had a headache, so I couldn't believe in my own lies. So, I asked my friend Shannon for some pills, and she gave me 2 pills, like, for my headache, obviously.
Whatever.
Happy pills, whatever.
And and after that, I felt so calm and relaxed, and I was like, we're gonna win. Nothing's going to change.
She actually dropped you some kind of anti-anxiety med.
Probably.
You took a Xanny bar or some Ativan or something? Is that what happened?
It was, and everyone was looking at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, Alex, we're losing 2-0. And I was like, just wait. Just relax and wait. And everyone was angry with me and they were like, and I was just looking and I was just waiting for something to happen. And then when Santi hit that free kick, I was like, that's amazing. And I mean, the atmosphere wasn't really sour. It wasn't really sour when we went 2-0 down. It was still like, come on, Arsenal, come on, Arsenal, come on, because it was so early in the game, you know, and it was Hull City. So after Santi's free kick went in, the optimism just surged again, you know. Even at halftime, they were asking supporters what they think the final score will be. Everyone was like, it's going to be 3-2. They all felt like we could come back, and it was amazing to see, you know, when Kashani's goal went in, the amount of celebrating we did, I almost fell over twice. Like, everyone was so ecstatic. And Ramsey's goal, I mean, even the misses made you on your, left us on our feet. We couldn't believe
Gibbs
what we
miss.
Were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gibbs.
I'm not sure how many times Joaquin and I turned to each other and just me with my hands on the side of my head, in the last, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes of normal time.
I think I was banging my hand on the doorway when we missed chances. And just like, it was a bit nerve wracking. Like I had confidence that we would get it done, but it certainly, we dug ourselves a hole. But the one good thing about it was that like it happened so early, you know? So it's, you know, you're the match is in its infancy. You're down two goals, and the big thing is the one thing you knew is like, all right, get a goal before halftime. The momentum will swing. You know, one goal is, you know, it's not too much to ask. This would go to extra time if it ended level. So it's kind of like it's, it felt like it took kind of a calculated and, you know, kind of slightly changed their approach to the match, and it paid off. I mean, the Arsenal team certainly knew that they were better than Hull City, and it was going to take a while to get it done. And Santi stepped up and really gave us what we needed at that time.
Santi's goal was the most important goal. Like it was so, so important.
Absolutely. Like, to change that tide, because everything, once he scored, it was like, all right, we got this. And everyone, I mean, yeah. the emotions that you're talking about, everyone feeling, were the same things that we felt throughout the pub. Everyone I spoke to at halftime. It really felt like, you know, all right, we're going to right this ship and get it done. Elliot, how are you feeling after the two goals? Do you think this was Birmingham all over again?
I would have preferred to not have conceded the two goals. Weirdly, I felt very confident going into the game. I think most people felt very confident. And the whole thing had a feeling of destiny about it. And it's weird because the idea of losing the final, as weird as this sounds, the idea of losing the final hadn't really legitimately entered my mind. Right. And the irony is, the idea of losing the final didn't even enter my mind at 2-0 down. When it first entered my mind was in extra time, because the thought occurred to me that they were out on their feet, and if we didn't finish them and it went to penalties, there was a legitimate chance that we wouldn't win the penalty shootout. And so the thought occurred to me that Wenger's rolled the dice. He's taken off players that would have been handy to have in a penalty shootout. We have to get the goal in extra time. So weirdly, I felt more nervous in extra time than I did down 2-0, because I felt that getting the goal was absolutely essential. You know, I don't think you could say you enjoyed the game because of those two girls, two goals, you can enjoy.
You can watch.
Not so much. No cup though. But yeah, I think what happened to me is because of the goals being conceded as early as they were, obviously I think everybody felt confident. I think it also had a really negative effect on Hull a little bit. I know they had a chance to go 3-0 up and Gibbs headed off the line. But they came out those first 10 minutes and really played football. And they had made a decision to come at us. I think with a two-goal lead, their mindset probably changed to we can defend this lead. And they became less an attacking force in the match almost immediately. And while I think Cazorla's goal was crucial because it gave us the belief that this could be done, I think their willingness to then cede territory, concede possession, also gave us the confidence to get back into the match. And so in a way for them, the mindset that had gotten them into that advantageous position ebbed away when they took the two-goal lead. And ultimately, for me, you know, the other thing that I thought was so stark, such a stark contrast, like if you just look at the season in a nutshell, like we started the season losing a game, first game of the season, getting screwed by a referee. We end the season winning a trophy in spite of getting screwed by the referee.
Over and over again.
And there was this beautiful symmetry about it. But, you know, everything about it, like so many of the cliches about Arsenal are the things you think you know. We don't score from direct free kicks. We don't score from corner kicks. Arsene Wenger doesn't make good tactical substitutions. The things you think you know, all of those things were reversed in this match. We scored from a direct free kick. We scored from a corner kick. Arsene made inspired substitutions. It was really all a beautiful inversion of the whole season experience.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. I think to your point about talking about Hull being, I don't know, like having trouble because of the way they dropped off in their tactics. I bet if you asked Steve Bruce, I mean, how he would like it, he would have rather had those goals closer to halftime. I mean, that's a pretty obvious thing to say, but you know, to have to defend a lead like that for 45 minutes instead of 80 minutes, it makes a huge difference. You know, so even if it were to come a little bit later in the game, we really scored.
If they continued to play it 2-0 up the way they were playing when the whistle blew, they would have had I would have been more nervous. It was the way they almost mentally switched into time. I mean, the funny thing is they started the time wasting. They started defending. And I think it gave our players that feeling of they're done being an influence in this match. If we keep the pressure on, they'll fold. And that's what happened. And the reason they tired and they were out on their feet at the end is because they had committed 80 minutes of the match to just defending. And you can't do that and expect to be fresh the last 20 minutes.
No, it's certainly more tiring chasing a ball than having it.
Yep.
Absolutely. Joseph, we had chats on the way and kind of talked about who we felt needed to step up for the match. I thought it was really huge what we saw from Santi, that goal. Who you really felt like really got us, not just across the line, obviously Ramsey scored the winner, but who do you think really made the difference for us to really turn the tide?
Yeah, I mean, I guess upon reflection, I think Santi had a good game overall, but it seemed just to be more, you know, we talked actually earlier in that first half, you know, that we didn't see much of Ramsey or Ozil, and it wasn't really until he made a substitution that it seemed that they, I don't know if they gained more space or, because it wasn't like Sanogo held the ball up to bring him into the play, but it just seemed whatever changed, and I'm not exactly sure where that moved Giroud, but it just seemed to, it brought those two into the game more. Overall, I thought, what one person? I'm not sure. I don't know that other than the goal was really one player for me that stood above the rest. It for me, it was the real team effort.
Yeah, I thought it was a very committed performance kind of across the board. Yeah, you know, I agreed with you. It felt like, I think there were some symptoms of Ramsey trying to force a few things, and he looked a little sharp. And even at the end, he really looked in extra time like his legs were gone, but he's such the heartbeat of the team. We just kind of knew you couldn't take him off because he really is, you know, a driving force and a bit of the backbone of this team. And it was a bold substitution, even at that point. Although, I mean, you made the great point of, you know, the substitutions that Arsene made in extra time, taking off Ozil is a bold move. But I guess maybe after his couple penalty misses that he's had recently, it was a good idea to take him off and leave it on these other guys. And it's not like the Arsenal team would lose any faith without him, because the rest of this core has really been together for a few years and know that they can get across the line even without Ozil, you know, in something like a penalty shootout. And you know, they came on, you saw Rosicki and Jack come on and make a difference in with their running and moving. You know, it was great to see. And you feel like every move that we made really was the right move and was done well tactically, which is not something we've always been able to say for Wenger. But in this big match, you know, it did, and his decisions were right, and the team persevered. You know, they had the character to push through and come back from this. And you could tell the team had the confidence in themselves, especially once they saw it, they scored the goal. You watch the body language. You look at the team, and, you know, they didn't panic. They knew, all right, we need to get this – you know, we need to get this other equalizing goal, and we're going to get it, and we're going to do it playing our way.
I was just going to say, Joaquin, the thing that I think is interesting, too, is, like, two things, one about Ramsey and one about Yaya Sanogo. So, like, Aaron Ramsey didn't have his finest game, in my opinion, for long stretches of it. I know statistically he wound up, you know, looking like he had an excellent game because that's just Ramsey. Covers a lot of ground, makes a lot of tackles, touches the ball up. But, like, I don't think he played as well as he had this season. The thing about Ramsey, though, that was beautiful to see, especially late in the game, he was the one taking shot after shot, chance after chance. And so often on this Arsenal team, especially in big spots, the question has been, who's going to step up and want to score the winning goal? Who's going to take the chance? There's a lot of after you, no, after you, after you. Ramsey is a player who, when the moment needs someone to step up, he's willing to be the one to carry the weight of the moment. And just the thing I'll say quickly about Sanogo that I think is interesting. I'm not convinced Yaya Sanogo technically is very good at football, but I will say this about him. He reminds me of Theo Walcott when Walcott was a young player in this one respect. Walcott, when he started, he didn't necessarily make the best decisions. He wasn't necessarily technically very good. There was the whole footballing brain thing. But Walcott scares defenders. He always has. They don't know how to play him. They have to change how they approach the game. He pulls them out of position. Yaya Sanogo does a lot. When he came on the pitch and every time he's played, defenders don't really know what to make of him. He gets into spaces Giroud won't go. He pulls them into positions Giroud doesn't. And again, this isn't a critique of Giroud. It's the fact that what Sanogo does, even if his touch isn't great or his decision-making isn't perfect, he unsettles the defense. And that creates opportunities for the people around him. And there's something to be said for having players you can put on the pitch who defenders just don't really know what to do with them. And Sanogo gave us that.
Yeah, there's an unpredictability to his game. I think part of that has to do with the fact that exactly, that since he has no idea what exactly is going to happen next, that it's just as hard for the defenders to judge. Because you've seen a lot of times when he has successfully gone through defenders, it's been kind of like bundling it through their legs where a heavy touch kind of gets through and he muscles his way through. And so, you really see a decent raw product. And you see an athlete, a guy who's a competitor, hopefully someone who will not be permanently broken. You know, his track record with injuries isn't so great. But, you know, we've seen the fighting spirit. And for a kid his age with the size and physicality that he already has, he's not even fully filled out into, you know, his full man size. I mean, he really could be – like if he were to fill out at that size and get some technique in terms of his presence, he could be – even more of a Drogba than you know, the physicality that we have in Giroud.
But I think the point is, if all he ever is someone who can come on the pitch and change the way the defense has to set up against us or play against us and totally change the riddle that they have to solve. The thing I'll say about Giroud is, for all of his qualities, he's a puzzle that defenses often find easy to solve. And Sanogo seems to present a totally different challenge. If all he does is give us that option to change how defenses have to play us, that's a very valuable thing. I mean, we've been crying out for Walcott's pace. Sanogo's got some of the qualities that Theo has in that his game forces defenses to change the way they're playing us, which is important.
Now, Alex, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you think this victory really means for the club and how we're going to move forward from this? Do you see this as a springboard for us?
Well, before I touch on that, I just wanted to add on the Sanogo substitution.
Sure.
Basically, what made that substitution so great was that Hull City had three centre backs covering Giroud, so they had Chester, Bruce, and Davis covering Giroud. Every time Giroud got the ball, they would all crowd surf him, and he wouldn't have any space. Giroud lost the ball three or four times in like 10 minutes, just because he had no one to pass it to, no one to run off of. Because they just came really quickly and hacked him down or pushed him down, and he would usually get no free kicks. So what Arsene did was he brought Sanogo on, and Giroud drifted to the left a bit. So every time Sanogo made a run, Giroud drifted to the left, and he had a lot more space to do whatever he wanted. And we saw that with both the goals, because Giroud managed to up-muscle a defender and cross it into Sanogo, and we know that Sanogo hit it out for the corner. So Giroud created that chance, and Sanogo could have finished it off, and they worked really well together in that respect, you know. And for the third goal, Sanogo bundled the ball, and somehow it got to Giroud, and Giroud did a fantastic backheel to Ramsey. So they do manage to draw defenders out in their own way, and I think they work well together for some strange reason. And Sanogo has a lot of developing to do, a lot, but he is young, and he is like coming to terms with so much in this club already. So it's going to be exciting seeing what he develops into in the next 2-3 years. We might not even see his own product properly until he's 23-24 anyway. As for what this all meant to us and where we move forward, I mean, we're going to have to win more, aren't we? And it's and we're going to have to push on. I mean, well, the thing is, it's obvious. We're going to buy good players in the summer. We're going to improve. You know, we're going to have a couple of departures. We're going to replace them. We're going to start the season fresh. Everyone's going to ask, well, are these signings going to be top class? One or two will be. The rest will be typical Wenger signings, you know. And we're going to get better. Hopefully, the FFP has some kind of effect on Man City, and our rivals don't spend as much, but you can't really hope for that anymore, seeing as how corrupt football is. But this meant a lot to the fans. A lot, and to the players, you can see the relief on them. And the manager, the people were commenting saying Wenger looked 10 years younger after the final whistle. You know, he looked so happy. All the players looked so happy. And to say that, to see the change of fortunes we've had, like even through adversity, but even through the decisions of the referee, we still managed to win. There was like four penalties in that game that we could have had, and for some reason, Probert didn't give them. And we're so used to seeing that team lose to those things, but we didn't. And it makes us feel a lot better coming into next season. And hopefully we can start early by winning the Community Shield, you know?
That'd be a nice way to start it. Joseph, why don't you give me your take on this for us moving forward?
Going forward already. All right.
Well, you have more to say about this. Go ahead.
No. I've just really been enjoying this without trying to forward look too much.
We'll start.
But I guess I'll start now. I mean, I think most of what I've read all over the place and from several larger blogs and most of the papers is this is great, but Arsenal need, I don't know, four really big signings or, you know, whatever that number is, you know, there's $100 million to spend and here's the six players that we need to bring in when we know that that's not going to happen. But, you know, to me, it almost further validates his work. He got this team to challenge for a title for however many weeks it was, the most that anybody led. And obviously, if we had better depth and didn't run down some players, then maybe we could have sustained that a little longer. I'm not sure we would have been able to win it, but maybe we would have sustained it a little bit longer to make people a little happier. I guess maybe if we'd have given it up in May like Chelsea did or April and like Chelsea did, or May when Liverpool did, it would have been better. I'm not sure. But, you know, to me this validates to him his work in developing his players his way and not going out and buying. I mean, I'm sure we'll go and buy a player or two, but it's not. I just don't see us going out and buying two 30 million pound players. I just don't see it. I think he'll continue to find the players that he thinks that he can make a difference with, and whether that takes a year to make the difference or it takes 2 years, I think he's going to continue this path. I think he can develop his players better than he can go out and buy still.
All right.
So, I mean, I think we'll get a couple of – I think we'll get a kind of big signing, but I'm not expecting any blockbuster Ozil signings again.
Well, we'll get to transfers and stuff in a little bit. I was just kind of seeing how you felt and what it meant for us, like, you know, to spring forward. But let's finish up our review of the season. It's obviously been a bit turbulent. There's a lot of good, sustained work done by Arsenal this season by comparison to seasons past. There's certainly a fair deal of blame to lay about for the way we've finished and all that. But let's focus on some of the good things. Let's start with our Arsenal player of the season, and I'll start with you, Elliot. Who is your player of the season and why?
I mean, the obvious player of the season is Aaron Ramsey. And the why is because of his goals, his heart, his energy, his commitment, his improvement, his fortitude in overcoming adversity, his validation of Arsene Wenger's faith in him, the fact that he came good in some ways, I think, takes the pressure off the manager, right? Because the manager gave him a new deal when nobody else would have. I think there are so many reasons it's Aaron Ramsey. And, you know, it's because it's also what didn't happen for Eduardo. You know, we've seen, unfortunately, Diaby's career ruined by a bad tackle. We've seen Eduardo's Arsenal career ruined by a bad tackle. It's everything we didn't get from those players. It's all the things that Aaron Ramsey is. So it's definitely Aaron Ramsey. I think also because of what happened to us when he was gone. We got to see firsthand what it means to have him in the squad and what it means not to. But I think if I was going to pick the not obvious choice, because Ramsey is the obvious choice, I think if I was going to pick the not obvious choice, it would be Per Mertesacker. His leadership, his energy, he was ever present in the league. You know, defending has been a problem for this team for years. It isn't anymore. And I think Mertesacker, again, someone who was bought by Wenger in what was considered a trolley dash, and there were questions of whether he was good enough. And not only is he good enough, he's the kind of player you want at Arsenal. He's got the kind of attitude you want at Arsenal. He's infectious. It's part of this renovation of the team. We used to have players like William Gallus, who were cancers, Van Persie, who was a cancer. Yeah, that, cunts, cancers.
Both,
you know,
both of them.
They both start cunts with C. Cancer. And it's the renovation of this team into something that's likable, lovable. They love each other. We love them. And so while they still have their flaws and there are still things that need to be fixed, I think Per Mertesacker, you know, harkens back to the days of Bold and Adams and Keown and, you know, that kind of that kind of era. I mean, not that we're boring Arsenal, but where we were solid at the back and that was the platform. And I still think that after what we've been through, where we could give up goals in all kinds of ridiculous ways, it's beautiful to see a center back pairing. When Koscielny and Mertesacker raised the trophy together, that partnership, that you can win trophies with a center back partnership like that. So Ramsey is the choice, but Mertesacker for me is the dark horse choice for and for everything on and off the pitch.
Yeah, I faced an interesting question this morning from Alex the Monk. He asked me something just about the squad, and he was saying, because we're comparing squads from years past, and he asked me if the 07-08 team was, how did they rank? Like, were they better than the team that we currently have? And the answer I had for him was that, well, I don't think we could definitively say that there was less or more talent on that team, but the one thing I can say is that this is a much better team as a unit. You know, you don't have some of those characters that are cancers. You had people like, you know, we had Adebayor at the club. We had William Gallus at the club. Like, that's a level of cuntiness that we certainly do not have anymore. And you see what, you know, the dividends it pays to have, you know, players that really care about each other. And you can see there's a really good team ethos and what a difference that makes for everyone on the pitch and everything that they do. You know, you see these pictures and you can see they're all really good friends. And the development of that team sentiment is huge compared to having.
And I'll give you the perfect contrast, right? The class clown, if you will, before was Emmanuel Eboué, right? He was the jokester. He was the class clown. But the reality is, he was a clown. He offered very little on the pitch. I mean, he played decently at right back briefly, but realistically, he was a liability at times. He wasn't a serious footballer. Then you look at Podolski in this team. He seems genuinely liked, but he also genuinely contributed down the stretch. He's a talented footballer. He's not there as a cartoon or moral support. So this team has a seriousness about it and a professionalism about it that I think can win things. And I don't know that I've felt that way. And I'll say one thing about winning a trophy versus finishing top four. You know, you can convince yourself that top four is a trophy, but it isn't. And winning reminds everybody why you want to win. And so you talk about what this does going forward. Maybe even for Arsene Wenger, it reminds him, holy shit, this whole time I've been convincing myself top four is a trophy, and you know what, it is an achievement, but I want more days like this. Maybe it even refocuses him back on the importance of not just being in the Champions League, but winning things.
But Elliot, whenever Arsene Wenger's talked about top four being like a trophy, he only meant it in regards to financially and stature. That's the only comparison that was ever really made.
Alex, yeah. I totally agree with you. And I'm not insinuating in any respect that he didn't understand the difference. But I think when you go 9 years without winning an actual trophy, you start to create acceptable substitutes, right? You create a substitute, and finishing in the top four became our substitute. And while I don't take away from its importance, sometimes getting the real thing, you know, right, reminds you why the substitute isn't sufficient.
Right. It's like when, you know, you're jerking off to porn and you finally get laid,
thank
right?
You.
It's
thank
it's,
you.
It's, yes.
You know. We were all thinking.
Right,
it.
Alex?
Glad you said it.
No comments.
Alex has the second screen experience going on right now.
Yeah, you certainly hope it creates a hunger or a thirst for trophies.
Because once they
get a taste, you know, they've been to the promised land, and they know FA Cup is great. But I mean, even imagine if that parade had been for the league, you know, it would have been ramped up to be even another level. you know, because the FA Cup is great and that's grand. But if we won the league again, or you win a Champions League or something like that, these players now have that taste and they're like, we need to go out and get more silverware. We have the FA Cup. Now we have to defend it. Now I have to go out and do bigger and greater things.
Well, I mean, this hopefully is what we all had hoped the Carling Cup final would have been in 2011. That's what we were all kind of that team that is completely pretty much gone. That team needed that win, and it failed, and it hurt, and it shows you what happens when you fail. You know, when a young team fails like that. And then hopefully we get the opposite reaction.
The thing is, it was great for like Koscielny, for example. He was so disappointed after 2011, after that cup final. And for him to redeem himself in the way he did in this final, it's incredible.
He certainly has a knack for popping up with important goals at important times. Joseph, give me your player of the season.
Well, we just talked about him. Koscielny is my player of the season.
Nice.
Just important time. He's actually who I voted for today, but didn't make my vote on the .com. Important times. He's really, his goals have been important, which was, you know, we haven't really gotten too many goals from our center backs or our fullbacks over the last few years, and we've had more, I think, this year than I can remember. I mean, Purs had a couple, and I'm not sure how many Koscielny had, but they all seemed important at the time.
Yeah, they seemed to score goals in big matches.
Yeah, but I just think, I mean, overall, his toughness, I mean, he played a hell of a lot of matches. I know Per did too, but Koscielny, I just love his tenacity and in big matches. In some of the big matches, I thought he played really well. I mean, especially the beginning of the year when everybody was fit. You know, I thought, you know, the first match against Liverpool, I mean, Suarez was absent that day because they did a really good job on him, you know.
As good as Mertesacker is and what great season he's had, when it comes to, like, talent and you look at the athleticism and whatnot, you'd be hard-pressed to find many center backs out in Europe that you know, can perform and have all of the physical attributes and characteristics that Koscielny has. Like who comes to mind that's better than Koscielny in a physical aspect? Like Thiago Silva, maybe? I mean, in terms of having this pace and power and presence and all the technique as well. And, you know, and this is he's another testament to Arsen for being a gem that he a rough diamond that he polished and has turned into one of the top class defenders.
Yeah, and you know he's obviously done a lot of work physically to get stronger over the last few years. You know, after 3 years, he's gotten stronger physically. He's, you know, when he first got here, he looked pretty slight.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That after that first year, he bulked up a bit. You know, he certainly he filled out. All right, Alex, how about you? Who's your player of the season?
Since you've already mentioned like the obvious ones, my one was Szczęsny.
Okay.
I thought he's stepped up so much this season compared to last season. And even like the scariest moments we've had with him this season where he's sidestepped a player or a player has run towards him and he's tricked him somehow, he managed to get those right. And he saved us at important times this season with some really, really good saves. And he's obviously my dark horse for this because no one really cares about goalkeepers that much. So, because Ramsey's already been mentioned, and Per and Koscielny, I mean, those were our top three best players. And then if there's a fourth, then it's just Szczęsny to me. So,
and you know what, Alex, to your point, you said nobody cares about goalkeepers, but the reality is this may be the first season in ages we can say that a goalkeeper earned us additional points as opposed to costing us points.
Yeah,
there were definitely plenty of seasons there where Almunia may have cost us 8, 10, 12 points in a season. Fabianski, Manone. Szczęsny, you know, split the golden boot this year if it weren't for Arsene, you know, deciding to play Fabianski to prep him. Now we know to prep him for the final. He would have won the golden glove or whatever it is.
Golden gloves.
To your point, though, Alex, people don't think about the keeper. But if anyone should think about the keeper, it's Arsenal fans because the keeper was what held us back for several seasons.
Yeah, and you look at the difference. I mean, that – like you said, if it had been Fabianski, we might have been 14 points off instead of 7. You know, for all the teams in the title race, you look at the margins of difference. You know, like fourth place finished seventh, you know, 7 points off of the leaders. You know, the goalkeeper making these additional saves make all the difference in these title races, and that could really have done really swayed something so greatly. Yeah, and he really made a good case for himself. I, you know, I'm a big fan of Chesney. I think he did very well, and I think he was, you know, I'd argue, I mean, we're going to get to our team of the season. I put him in my team of the season for the Premier League. Because really, you know, he shared the Golden Gloves with Peter Cech, who's still a great or a very, very good goalkeeper. But if you look across the league, I mean, you know, you take these – if you had taken these blemishes of the balloon score lines, which none of us would fault Chesney for, you know, he would have had – you know, we would have been up there with the, you know, the fewest goals conceded in the league. You know, the first blowout, I think we had the least goals conceded in the league at the time. And, you know, that makes a big difference. And so his steady hands have been such a reassuring thing. And looking forward, I mean, I think
that's
next
what she year, said.
Yes, indeed. And looking forward, I mean, looking at the Premier League next season, I mean, when I look at who are going to be the best goalkeepers, it's going to be Chesney. Should be Courtois if he's back, you know, if he finally goes to Chelsea, which is going to break anyone who's a neutral or anyone else's hearts, because they'll have to see him go to those nasty bastards. And then David De Gea, you know, so these three keepers that are all, you know, between 22 and 24, just coming into their own as the new breed of top goalkeeper. And
let's just forget Joe Hart.
No, Joe Hart can take fourth. Fourth place can be a trophy for him, because I would put him right behind those other three. But yeah,
can I ask an off the agenda question? Unless you have it on the agenda, because this came up on other non-Arsenal podcasts, but football podcasts.
Sure.
And I know we're all biased, but realistically, would you trade our season for Liverpool's or Chelsea's?
No.
And but to me, that is the most clear and stunning example of why winning a trophy is important, because we had some humiliating losses this season. We had some lows, but no Chelsea fan and no Liverpool fan got to feel what we got to feel 17th of May on Saturday.
We have our cups, you know, we got something, you know what I mean? Like tangible evidence of doing something.
Let's put it this way. Joaquin, when they look back in the history of their club and we look back in the history of ours, the 2013-14 season will be an important season for us. For them, it'll just be it was kind of interesting. That season will fade into the past. This season will be it's going to go on that ring of honor. It's on that ring of honor.
Well,
Liverpool
fans will talk about this season forever anyway. So,
because hopefully it'll be another 10 years before they contend again, but I don't know that we'll be that confident.
Chelsea fans won't, but Liverpool fans definitely will.
Well, Chelsea fans are busy buying Manchester City shirts anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, Brian brought up a good point right now. He said Lloris was very good this season, which he was, but he plays for a shit club and finished outside the top four, so he will stay.
Well, he had a lot of practice.
Outside the top four. Yeah, he had plenty of practice.
He had plenty of practice.
Picking up all the net.
Lloris is that nice guy that works for a shit company, so you just won't talk to him until he quits.
Well, and now Spurs fans are definitely afraid that he might leave, you know, because if someone else comes calling.
Have to say, though, I mean, I don't hate Lloris, but I'm so glad it's him now, because I really did like Brad Friedel, and it pained me because I wanted to be able to like Brad Friedel, and now I feel like I can like him openly.
Yeah, I still don't like him.
Yeah.
Really?
Something about the fake accent always threw me off.
It's not fake. He's lived there a long time. Cut the guy a break.
He's a grown-ass man. When he moved over there, you don't develop that shit. So at some point, there's a cutoff age. It doesn't happen.
You're saying Clint Dempsey was never going to develop a North London accent.
Certainly not. He was never going to sound like someone from the Fulham area. Yeah. So just to round out those, I would say our player season was Ramsey. I mean, I guess that's we covered all those bases, and I was going to go otherwise, but you guys all covered the other people I thought were worthy. So we'll just go on from there. Best goal of the season. I know there's a lot of contenders. Let's just get a different one from each one of you, since there probably are three or four worthy of this.
I'll go first.
Go
ahead. My favorite one was Giroud against West Ham.
Okay.
When he controlled it and he just finished it.
That was a very, very good.
That was a very nice bit of individual technique. Finished with his right foot too.
The funnest moment.
Interesting, yeah, because he had his arguably his miss of the season in the same game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so good. Many to choose from.
All right, Joseph, I'm gonna go to you.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna take it. The Norwich goal, Jack's Norwich goal. That's my favorite goal. That's my favorite type of goal. And there's a lot of great goals that come outside of the box, but that's just not my idea of a great goal.
Yeah, it was fantastic bit of team play. I have to say, I think there were two goals like that this season. I was watching Cullen Davies' video. If you guys haven't seen it yet, there's a video of all 99 Arsenal goals in 9 minutes and 59 seconds. And it is fantastic to see. And, you know, he does a very good job of, you know, choosing all the different replay angles and getting a good angle, you know, for all the goals. Anyways, so we had two goals that were somewhat like that. Obviously, the Jack one was the best one, but I believe Rosicki had one also that was quite fantastic in that round.
The one where he chipped to the end.
But it's really beautiful to see something like that, that's winning goal of the season, that Jack goal against Norwich, because it was just so much beautiful, intricate play. And it's one of those things that's so infuriating as well, because so often we try to pull those off and it doesn't happen. But to have the final payoff is really was great. How about you?
People always used to say,
Elliot.
I mean, you know, there were better goals scored this season, but the one that I think combined being a good goal and the one I celebrated maybe the most was Rosicki's in the North London Derby away, the last of the three of the season, when he just cunted it in from the channel, because it. We were in an uncertain period at that time. There was genuine concern that had we lost that game, they could have overtaken us at that time. There felt like a lot riding on it. It was early in the match, and it was emphatic. I happen to like Thomas Rosicki a lot. He's just a player I have a soft spot for. So, yeah, so, I mean, obviously I'm ruling out goals from the FA Cup final because they're just too easy to be sentimental about. But so that was probably the one that, in terms of how I felt about it, was one I enjoyed tremendously.
Well, since we've taken all of those, I suppose I have to go with Aaron. you know, just
which
just
one? The FA Cup winner.
The FA Cup winner. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. I thought his goal against Liverpool was great too earlier in the season. Really
was it Norwich that one? The
Norwich one recently was great. That was great technique. I mean, you know, there's certainly something that I have to do with the occasion of it. And, you know, the Norwich goal, as great as it was, it's just the difference of doing it in a game with such implications. So, like, for example, the Liverpool game where, you know, it's a big decisive goal. Like, when you look at those highlights of all the goals he scored, you know, those goals, Dorkley, I think, also did a very nice infograph of this with all of the information, which I'll read out there. But, I mean, so many of those goals, you look at the score lines of those games and the goals he scored. He scored it against Olympiacos home and away, which is the Champions League qualifier, which in the beginning of the season, there isn't much more important than that match. You know, losing the first game of the match of the season to Aston Villa does not matter nearly as much as winning that Champions League qualifier. So we have Champions League for the season. And then you have a game against Liverpool, the team who was a title contender, you know, throughout the season. And then you have the FA Cup final. And I just thought it was just a wonderful way for him to cap off the season. You know, I was telling Joseph that even though Ramsey looked like shit, I was like, he's still going to score the winner because he's that guy for us this year. And he's turned into that talisman. So it was just so fantastic to see him pull it off.
You know what goal of his really impressed me? And it doesn't get talked about a lot, but I just when we went to Cardiff, and, you know, there are a lot of players that I think would have struggled in that environment because of his history there. And you're really sort of looking to see if it's just a purple patch or what kind of player he's becoming. That headed goal he scored at Cardiff.
Yeah, that was a beauty, wasn't it?
The technique.
Was Ozil delivered the pass right into the
Yep, exactly. The box? But, yeah. I mean, I remember as he scored that goal, I thought to myself, that's not an accident. He didn't just hit it as hard as he could from, you know, like, his movement, his leap, the head control, the calmness, like everything about that goal oozed class. And I remember thinking that, you know, he's really transcending now. That was a really cool game for him and a very special goal, I thought.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people talking about it. I think they were talking about the Arscast Extra this morning about when that moment was when they really felt that he had made the transition, that it wasn't just a purple patch. So was that the moment for you? That's the moment for you, Elliot, like that goal against Cardiff, you really thought?
I think I would say it actually was after he came back from injury.
I would agree.
Because I do think his form dipped slightly right before he got injured, in part because maybe he was being overplayed or was tired or whatever, fatigued, which is understandable. But I think it was when he came back from injury and basically picked up where he left off, because that's when you thought, all right, he hasn't played in months, and he's at the level he was when he was, you know, arguably the best player in England. So while that Cardiff moment was one where I said, I think we're really on to something here, it's his general play since coming back from injury that really cemented it for me.
Yeah, that's great. It was good to see that. I mean, I think for a lot of people that was the defining moment, right? I mean, really him coming back and still having it. How about you, Alex?
What was the most defining moment?
Well, no. When was the moment that you knew that it wasn't just a purple patch for Ramsey?
From the first second he scored.
From the first second he scored when?
From March. From last March.
Last March. Okay.
Yeah. When did he score? When did he score last season? He scored a really good goal, and I thought he's going to start scoring now. Because thing is, you know what I'm like with Arsene Wenger. If Wenger says something, I'll be like, yes, I believe you. I believe in you. So,
you and me both, Alex.
Yeah. So when he said when Ramsey starts scoring, he's not going to stop scoring, I bought into that like a prostitute at a gay bar. And so, that's when I believed it wasn't a purple patch.
And you, Joseph?
I was just worried that it was a purple patch for him. And then once he came back and scored and played well, I thought, oh, all right, well, good. I'm glad that he's the player that we were convinced he was months ago, you know? So I would think it was upon his return.
It was kind of amazing, you know. I was always happy with Ramsey. I was amazed at who he could possibly be. But when he became that player, when he actually kept scoring, you know, I was saying to myself, "What the fuck am I going to write about?" Like, he's proved himself now. I don't need to defend him anymore, you know.
Yeah. You know, I think the thing with Ramsey too. I mean, he's a player who's definitely benefited from the improvement in the team overall. Not to say that he hasn't been part of the reason for the improvement, but playing with guys like Ozil, playing with Cazorla, the improvement in the back four, because I think the thing that he's had a freedom about him, you know, the ability to make those runs, and Ozil finds those runs and Cazorla finds those runs, and the back four is a little more stable behind him, so you don't have that nervousness when you collect the ball in our own half that Calamity is one pass away. I think the thing that's so stunning, if you want to talk about the contrast from last season to this season, we led the Premier League in goals conceded from individual errors the season before this one.
Right.
And this season, that was almost eliminated entirely from our game. And I don't think you can overstate Ozil's importance in that. When he has the ball at his feet, he's calm, he's confident, he's difficult to dispossess. I know he was dispossessed a few times in sort of big moments in big games. But I think Ramsey's improvement is also a bellwether for the improvement in the squad itself, because some of the things that Ramsey struggled with last season, lingering on the ball too long, losing possession because he didn't have options, not having the freedom to go forward and make those runs to get into scoring positions, were actually a reflection of deficiencies in the side itself. And his improvement mirrors the improvement in the squad, his freedom to get forward more, people making themselves available for that ball,
certainly,
you know, not conceding goals when we do turn it over. I mean, I'm not trying to just whitewash his own improvement personally, but I think he's been a bellwether for the squad in general.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. These guys know I've been a fan of his for years, but like when he came back and looked really solid at the end of last season, I felt really good about it. And I mean, I suppose when I really knew it was real was just once he started scoring those goals in the beginning of the season. So, I mean, I'd say it was early this season because he was on fire in preseason. He started off with a bang. He scored those Champions League goals, early goals. I mean, just watching these the early part of the of the goals of the season, and he's involved in, what, 80% of the goals? I mean, you just see him involved in one capacity or another for almost everything and at the start of the season. And it was just like, you know, we've got the real McCoy, and it was just a matter of – I never had any doubt there was a purple patch. I just, you know, was worried about injuries, and that's just one of those things that happens.
And you know, Joaquin, I don't think it's excessively optimistic to suggest that either Oxlade-Chamberlain or Jack Wilshere or both could be prepared to take maybe not the leap to the level that Ramsey is at, but a leap now this summer. They could make a similar stride like he did because they both had seasons that were truncated and abbreviated by injury and interrupted. Oxlade-Chamberlain had a brilliant preseason also.
Yeah, I had big hopes.
He had moments where he shined. If they can get maybe just a little bit of game time, you know, in Brazil for England, just for fitness, come back and have good preseasons, you know, you start to think about what in-form Jack and Oxlade-Chamberlain's could mean, and we can start trotting out like a new signing all over the place here if you want.
Yeah, I mean, as Joseph loves to say, we will promote from within.
Promote from within.
And those two clearly look like players that look like they're ready to make the jump. I thought Oxlade was ready to do it this season, and he did show it in patches. But like we said, you know, an injury-blighted campaign that really, really missed a lot. Mm-hmm.
All I need is Theo back, so whatever.
He's my favorite, Joseph. He's my absolute favorite.
I'm really, seeing those 99, because I watched that compilation of goals, and I missed watching that kid play. I love watching that kid play.
Him and Jack Wilshere, yeah, I think they're underrated and so important.
Yeah, well, let's move on to our team of the season, gentlemen. I'm going to go with you, Alex. Do you have let's hear your Premier League team of the season.
Okay, well, I think Szczęsny is my goalkeeper.
Okay.
Purely because I fucking hate Chelsea and anything associated with them. My left back is Gibbs. Purely because Leighton Baines looks like he belongs in the 60s and he looks like he's got a disease. So,
good reasons.
No, that's sound logic.
Perfect. I don't really need
to podcast standards. You don't need to elaborate. We got you there. All right, move on.
Okay, Mertesak and Koscielny, and then because Sanya's unsure about signing a new contract, I've put Coleman.
Okay.
In midfield, I've gone for a player I don't even like, but he's more likable than the other shitheads. So Henderson has been really good this season for some reason.
Okay.
And I've got Yaya Toure next to him. And ahead of that, I've got Ramsey. And then to his left, you can put either Suarez or Sturridge. And then you've got Hazard on the right. So that's the team.
Wow!
And up top, you were missing your central striker, or you were?
It's Suarez and Sturridge. They interchanged.
Okay.
Like pricks.
Fair enough. Let's move on to you, Joseph.
All right. Well, I've got Szczęsny also because as good as Cech is, he plays for Chelsea. I've got Baines because all you do. Love Gibbs, but, you know, I mean, he's got to play more of the season for me to award it to him.
He played more than Baines, by the way.
Did he?
Yeah.
Ooh. So pick Gibbs, then.
All right, I pick Gibbs, then.
All right, go on.
FYI.
And because Baines has a disease or something. Anyway, and then and then I've got Koscielny, and as much as I wanted to put Purr, I put Ivanovic.
Interesting. At center back, even though he only played right back.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And your right back then?
Coleman. Because I'm as solid as Sanya was. I didn't think he was great this season. He was just good to me. And then there's lots of people I don't like in the rest of this list, but I thought I picked Lallana. I picked. Toure, Ramsey, and then I had Gerrard.
Oh my god.
He played well in his position until he slipped. And just for that reason alone, I'm picking him because I never want to forget that he slipped.
I honestly don't think Steven Gerrard was one of the top 10 or 15 midfielders in the Premier League this season. I think the media invented that.
I think he was pretty shit towards the beginning of the season, and then once he kind of went through a purple patch towards the end of the season, they were like, "Oh, Stevie G's so brilliant in this holding role," and it's like,
no, I thought he played well before every.
The thing is, he hasn't stopped slipping. Like in the shower every day, he falls over and slips in the shower every day. You know.
And then up top, I have Suarez and Hazard.
All right, Elliot.
I wasn't thrilled about making that list. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, I don't enjoy this at all. Let's just be clear about that. The problem for me here is that there are players that I think I would pick, but I just don't feel good about picking them.
So pick whoever you want, man. Do whatever your heart desires. This isn't the official Premier League team of the season. This is the Pintcast pundit team of the season. So whatever reason you have, you want to say he doesn't make it because he's a cunt, that's a perfectly valid argument.
Okay, because I'm going to pick Chesney. I do think that Chesney won us games. He didn't lose us games. I think there are other keepers that were excellent this season, but a lot of them, I mean, Cech lost Chelsea games. He made some crucial mistakes, and I can't think of a game we lost because of Chesney or drop points because of Chesney. I think he was just very, very solid. I think he's criticized because of his off-pitch sort of youthful fan behavior, but he's a young kid. I mean, he's only going to get better and more serious about his job. I worry sometimes that Wenger isn't a huge fan of Chesney only because he wants serious players, but he was excellent. I love the season he had, so he's my keeper. I want to pick Gibbs. I think Gibbs is the best left back in England. I don't think Baines is. I think Baines is better going forward, and he's great at free kicks, but I think Gibbs is a better defender. Interestingly, you could probably pick Azpilicueta here.
Yeah, sadly.
But because he plays for Chelsea, I'm simply going to rule him out. My center backs, no question, are Perrin Koscielny. They were the best center back pairing in the league. The games where they were poor weren't their fault. I can honestly not look at the loss to Chelsea away, the loss to Liverpool away, and say that it was Perrin and Koscielny that were at fault. So I'm picking them. I think the fact that Kompany has been praised the way he has, ridiculous. I think he had a very uneven season. Right back, for me, and this is why it's so emotional for me, I'd pick Sanya. I love the guy. I'm going to miss him so much. Look, he is not a great attacking fullback. No one wins more aerial duels than Sanya, period, from the fullback position. He is an absolute terror in the air. He's virtually impossible to beat. He came back from a broken leg that caused him to have an uneven season and was as good as anyone. I guess you could pick Azpilicueta or Coleman, but I'm going to pick Sanya. So in case you're keeping track, I have all Arsenal players to this point. Where I'll deviate is, can I pick Yaya Toure as a holding midfielder?
Sure. It's your team.
I mean, he's not really, but if you said I have to pick one player.
He played multiple years at defensive midfielder for Barcelona. That's good enough for me. You can still call
him. In my opinion, Yaya Toure is the best football player in the Premier League, period. I would put 11 of him on the pitch and give myself a good chance. Of all the players in the league that don't play for Arsenal, he's the one I openly drool over the thought of him playing for Arsenal. Yeah, covet, exactly. That would be the other word. Maybe Suarez, but he's such a cunt, so forget it. So then I would say my other two midfielders are Ramsey and Ozil. I think Ozil is incredibly underrated. I know he had a little dip around the Christmas period. I mean, what people don't realize about Mesut Ozil is Jose Mourinho didn't play him 90 minutes in any game last. I think maybe one game all of last season. And Arsene Wenger leaned on him and played him a lot, 90 minutes, every game. I mean, it was a big step up, and I think he made a huge difference.
And a step he wanted, though, too. He wasn't happy about being substituted in Madrid.
Yeah, no. I mean, he wanted to play, and he did get to play. I think you could put David Silva in there. He's just a tremendous footballer. I mean, I'm not necessarily going on the seasons these guys had, to be honest. I'm going just off of my feelings about them as players. So then front three, Eden Hazard has got to be in there. It pains me to say it. I don't like him. But
he's going to leave soon.
Yeah, so that makes me like him more.
Yeah,
so
the fact that he could leave him in the lurch should be a nice.
Yeah, I can live with that. You have to go with Suarez. He's arguably one of the top four strikers in the world right now.
And left wing.
I think you could make an argument, and I know that this is crazy, but I thought Sterling was exceptional. Okay. I mean, his pace, his goals, when he was on his game, he was unplayable this season.
That's because he has incredible support from his children.
He can nearly feel the team already, right? Just about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an argument. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I have to admit, I'm sort of top half of the table centric in that I don't know the players as well as you guys probably do from the you know, around the league. I certainly don't think that you're going to pick anyone from Manchester United, Spurs. You know, I mean, I'll tell you who I'll put there. I'll put Kun Aguero there. How about there? You know, you have a front three of Hazard, Suarez, and Kun Aguero, and let them figure it out. And that's gonna be tough to beat. Yeah. So that would be my team.
Okay. Yeah. Mine's gonna be relatively similar to what you guys said. I'm gonna go with Szczęsny in goal. I'm actually gonna go for Luke Shaw at left back. I really do think he's quite a tidy prospect. I like Kieran Gibbs more than him right now. I just think Shaw might have a little more upside, possibly. But I really like Gibbs. And if Gibbs had been fit, if he had played more of the season, to that same point that the Joe was making earlier, he would certainly be my left back because I think his pace is like no one beats him in a foot race. It's one of those things. You know, he can chase Theo Walcott and stay. You know, Theo Walcott isn't going to make separation between the two of them, and that's impressive. You know, to have – and that's world-class pace at fullback, which is something that I think Arsenal's really valued and is great. You know, once he plays a little more consistently, I think he's come on leaps and bounds. But I'm going to go with Luke Shaw for now. I'm going to go with the Arsenal center backs, Perrin Koscielny, Seamus Coleman at right back, just because of we talked about how great the contribution is having center backs who can score goals, but looking what Coleman did on the offensive third – and what he brings to you in that sense, a player who can whip in such a great cross and has such a good nose for goal. I mean, it's a great asset to have. In midfield, I got to go with Yaya. I'm fine with putting him because I like an offensive team. I'm going to put him in the holding role as well alongside Ramsey. I mean, just think of that kind of access. I mean, that access in the middle would be – I mean, you could play 4-4-2 with that midfield. You know, you could put those two in the middle. Like, there's not – you know, you can't do it with every – formation and with every set of personnel. Like, I don't know that we're entirely set up for it at the moment at Arsenal to run that, but I'm going to put the two of them in there together. I would love to include Mesut, but I'm holding him to pretty high standards, and I think he's going to show us why he deserves to be in that team in the season next season. Because I don't think, you know, I think if you asked him, he thinks he can play better than he did. I'm gonna have to leave him out. I couldn't decide. I was gonna have to go with one of City's midfielders, but it's tough to pick from those that aren't the worst of people. I know Joseph is not a big fan of David Silva. He thinks he's overrated as hell.
Really?
I thought he had a better year this year, but I think for the last couple,
he thinks he's had a couple down years. Which yeah. I think he has kind of shown. I mean, we've all known his class. I think he did kind of show it more regularly.
I think he had a much better year this year. I would agree.
Yeah, I concur with you there. So I'll have to go with David Silva there because he definitely shown he's a bit of a different class. And then up front, I'm going to end up going with what you went with in the end, Elliot, because I'm a big fan of Kun Aguero. I thought early in the season the player of the year race was between Kun, Suarez, and Ramsey before, you know, when he was still in his purple patch before the holidays. So I'm going to stick with Kun because I like him a lot more than these other guys, to be honest. I know a few of those guys in Liverpool are, you know, Sturridge and Sterling both did really well, and I think Sturridge probably deserves to be in there, but not in my team. I don't want that shitty dancing bastard anywhere near my team. I'll take Kun Agüero, Suarez, and that little bastard, Eden Hazard, who hopefully will fuck off to PSG or somewhere else, maybe Real Madrid. I don't know. No, not Madrid, but somewhere else, and then we can gleefully watch as he's demonized by Chelsea fans for leaving. So,
by the way, the one player who I didn't hear talked about that I think because we all went I think we all went with Yaya Toure in sort of the holding role. You have to give Chelsea credit for one thing. Matic was a phenomenal January signing. Yeah. And if he had played the whole season, I mean, he really was a game changer for Chelsea. And that if we could find a guy like Matic to sort of, you know, be the incumbent for, you know, or the person who follows Arteta and Flamini in that position, that's the kind of player you really want there. He's a ball-playing defensive midfielder who covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, no, that's...
Not that I like him or want to say anything nice about him. But.
Oh, no. I think Matic is a very good footballer, and I like that Chelsea had to pay excessive money to get him back. That's like a small reprieve. It's like, ha-ha, yeah. You bastards. Like, you gave this guy away and had to pay for him again, but he's a very tidy footballer, and he's exactly the kind of guy, you know, Joseph and I have been talking about this for months now, just looking at him and also looking at Fernandinho, you know, guys with that kind of that work ethic and industry. And, you know, it's really that's like one of the few positions. I mean, you'd say as the way squads stand right now, like outside of right back, that an improvement in that department as well as at striker is really where this team can really improve and, you know, spur on to make a big difference. Let's go to a few questions I have. These have been asked by many of the different Pinecast listeners. We're going to start with the loanees. Which of the loanees do you think can actually come back and make an impact at the Arsenal? We're going to start with you, Alex. Joel Campbell, Chuksanike, any of these guys, you reckon any of them have a future with Arsenal and can really make a difference in this upcoming season?
Chucks? No. Akpom, no. None of the youngsters now have got the metal to make it quite yet. I think Campbell is interesting because he can provide us with something special. But I don't know whether he's got the Premier League quality yet. I can't really answer that question. Who are other loanees?
Kokolanza loanee. We have most of them are younger players.
Yeah,
I can't hear what you're saying. Say that again.
Oh, same. Most of them are the younger players. To be honest, I don't have the list in front of me at the moment.
I don't really think the younger players. Not next season. I mean, the only players that I'm looking forward to are the same ones that we were looking forward to this season. You know, Zilalem, Gnabry. You know, those are the players I'm looking forward to see. I'm looking forward to see Campbell as well. But whether it'll have a big impact.
All right, Joseph, do you think any of the loanies are going to make a difference next season?
No, none of them.
You expect Campbell to be sold, right? That's what you've been touting.
Yep, he's going to be sold. I just don't think he's ever been talked about as in our future plans.
Okay, and you,
Elliot? My anger. So.
Right, we haven't heard anything about him. How about you, Elliot?
What's the situation with Johan Giroud?
Sold today.
Sold
Hamburg. Sold
today.
Was he really?
Yeah, yes. I know it was a loan with option to buy. So that was always the expected outcome.
Because he's someone I was going to say definitely won't have an impact. I tend to not think that they will. I think the only impact we would see from any of the loanies is Capital One Cup next season. Look, I know Rio Miachi has been overhyped, but the few times I've seen him play, you know, you think maybe there's some potential there. It would be cool to see him stay fit just long enough to maybe get on the pitch once or twice and try something, but I don't think any of them. I think Chuksanike is probably the closest, and his only contribution would be Capital One Cup. I think what will be interesting is to see what happens with Serge Gnabry, because he was actually an important part of the team right around January, picked up a knock or something and then vanished completely and was never in the squad again. Be curious to see if he gets loaned out or if he is part of the first team next season.
Yeah, I think now that we got him to sign a new contract as well, which is nice, so then we can actually not worry about him, you know, him worrying about playing time is not as big of an issue. But I think
we'll see him in New York. I think we'll see him in New York.
I think that he's enough of a dangerous talent that he's a guy that you could loan out within the Premier League to the bottom half, and he's a guy who can command a regular starting spot or at least come in, you know, to be a regular member of like the first 15 of a Premiership side in a squad that's just, you know, maybe competing in the lower half. You don't see Campbell coming back in at all, Elliot? Are you with Joseph that he's only going to be sold for a profit?
I don't, you know, the problem is, I mean, it seems pretty clear that Arsene believes in Yaya Sanogo. He's got Giroud, and I mean, I get that Giroud could be sold, but let's say for a minute he's not. And then let's say that we do buy a center forward. I think we will, whether it's of the Cavani type or the Remy type, we're going to buy someone. You put that math together, and it doesn't add up to Joel Campbell being relevant. So, no, I don't think Joel Campbell is going to be relevant.
Just to pose this other question, because it's just a slight tweak on that. Do you think that Joel Campbell, Yaya Sanogo, or any of the other young strikers will be included in the squad, or will they be loaned out again or sold? So do you think Sanogo will be in the squad as well?
Yeah, Sanogo's staying.
Too much investment to let him leave now.
For Sanogo?
Not money-wise, but time.
But, I mean, in terms of getting him playing time, you don't see him being loaned out at all, really?
No.
No? Across the board, knows?
I would say there are two factors in that. One is it depends on who we buy at center forward in the summer, and if Giroud is sold. If Giroud is sold, then absolutely not. If we buy a center forward and Giroud stays, I think there's a chance that we could do a loan until January for Sanogo, because then you can legitimately say he's going to struggle to find time.
Maybe it's just
Capital One Cup.
Do you really think
that Giroud's going somewhere?
I think it's wishful thinking.
I didn't say. Now, wait a minute. Just because I have gone on record saying some fairly unpleasant things.
Damn, you're selling him already.
I know. I was like, who the fuck said he's going anywhere?
Now, hold on. Right,
let's assume Giroud is going to be here. I've got nothing.
Let's all take a deep breath for a second. No, all I'm saying is there have been rumors. I don't think they're true. I'm just saying if they were somehow to prove true, then you couldn't possibly see how Sanogo wouldn't be part of the squad, right? Because we're not going to buy three center forwards.
But under the assumption that we do buy a center forward, and a center forward of some stature, so it could be the stature could be as low as Vela or Remy, and it could be as high as Cavani. The striker comes in from that, and we still have Giroud. So, like, I'm expecting something in that huge gambit of what it could be, along with Giroud. Like, what the rest of our cause it still seems like you need to add bodies to the striker department, even though we don't play the 4-4-2 so often anymore, but it could be something that's deployed more. It seems like an additional
I think we've added enough bodies around Giroud.
You think we already have?
In terms of women bodies, female bodies, yes.
Those bodies. Well, can you ever have too many?
Can there ever be enough bodies around Giroud? No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know. That's
all
a
right,
tough
so
one.
Look, most of us think Sanogo's not going anywhere.
I would expect if we actually did sign someone else to send him out on loan to get some playing time. I really think he's another one, you know, similar to Gnabry. But I think just because a player of his type, I think Gnabry's more ready-made than Sanogo is right now, certainly technique and all those factors combined.
The thing about Sanogo is that I think you could do that with him maybe in another year. But he has only had 6 months under Wenger with the squad. I think that's too soon to send him out to another manager and another team and in their way of doing things. I think he might be just from not being with the club long enough to send out.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We sometimes send him out right away.
I think both our strikers are staying. I don't think they're going to go anywhere. I think Sanogo will be happy to be third choice or second choice next season.
I hope he's third choice, to be honest. Because, I mean, look, he still hasn't scored a goal. I expect him to score some goals for us.
Well, it'd be perfect for the Carling Cup and, you know, for 15 minutes. You know what I mean?
I think it could certainly be one of those things that maybe we see him go out on a January loan, depending on how things develop, you know, because we, you know, get a couple Carling Cup matches or
Joseph, for God's sakes, at least try to get your sponsorships right. It's Capital One Cup. They're Capital paying good One. Money for this.
So much money.
It's going to go back. Cup. It's going to switch back before we know it.
They're not paying enough for him to know it.
How weird was it? Hey, so at Wembley, were they drinking just Budweiser, or was it Budweiser brand champagne? Because I see Budweiser beer logos on those Magnum bottles. Anyone have any insight?
That's really weird. Yeah, they said it was Budweiser, which is disgusting to me. Like,
imagine to be celebrating with fucking Budweiser. That is the last thing I want to be drinking.
I've been in a fraternity house. Like, I don't need to get Budweiser poured all over me again.
Yeah, certainly enough of that, right? So let's go with – I got another question for you. Do you think – this is from Kista at Complete Ars. Will Jenkinson –
who's that? Who is she?
She is a lovely lady in misery.
Okay.
Will Jenkinson, with enough faith, come good like Ramsey? Quick answer for me. Let's go with you, Joseph. You think he's going to come
like
good?
Ramsey? No.
Okay.
I don't
okay.
Think
hold on. All right. Not like Ramsey in terms of a player like Ramsey. Do you think he's going to come good? Do you expect him to be the Arsenal number one right back within the next in 2 years?
I expect him to start in the Community Shield.
That's not an answer to the question.
Well, I think that Wenger's going forward with him. That's what I think. I think he will be our starting right back.
You stick to your lines all the time, right? Always going to promote from within. You can never deviate from the script. All right. I admire your resolve. I admire resolve, Elliot.
I'm waiting to be proved wrong.
Again, anyways, Elliot. Will Jenkinson make it at the Arsenal?
Yes, he will make it. I don't know that he will be the future first choice, but I think of all the players we've ever had, Jenkinson might be one of the rare examples of a guy who would be happy to be the alternate. The guy who gets in for cup games, plays occasionally, isn't necessarily first choice. Interestingly, I think physically he has the tools to be number one. He's got speed. He puts in a good cross. I think he obviously has the right drive and energy. The concern right now is his positioning is poor, and the biggest problem for him is if you press him in his own half, he makes mistakes. And a fullback in our system can't do that. So I think he needs experience. I think that can come in the cups and against some of the smaller sides. But, yeah, I think he will make it at Arsenal. Whether or not he makes it as the first choice regular starting right back, I can't say definitively. I think he's got a shot. I don't know.
On to you, Alex.
I think with all of our players, there is, especially the young ones, there is always we're always waiting for that boost of improvement. So it's still difficult to predict this about Jenkinson, but he has got the attributes. Because when we think about right backs, fullbacks in general, we want them to be more technical than they are, but most fullbacks aren't really that technical, you know, especially the defensive fullbacks. So like Elliot said, if he can improve his positioning and stop freaking out when things don't go his way straight away, and he'll be a fine right back. And he's the type of guy you just want at your club, you know. So, and it seems like he's going to stay regardless, even as a third choice. And that's good for us. We need that depth. We need that loyalty. Do I think he'll step it up one day? I hope so.
I tend to see it kind of similar to Elliot. I do think he will make the grade to be a good enough contributor in the team, whether or not he will be the next, you know, right back. I really do think that's going to be something we're going to have to sign this summer. And so if we bring in someone who is of a caliber, let's say somewhere between Jenkinson and Sanya, I think that's where it's going to go. But it's like you said, I mean, you got to have glue guys. You have to have people that are willing to fill a role in a squad. And honestly, with Sanya's departure most likely imminent, he's the kind of guy that, you know, with continued time in and around with the squad, as you know, we're kind of preying on the fact that he's a gooner, that he really will give his all to be at Arsenal. Like all of us believe that Jenkinson's the kind of guy who will take a role of not playing every match if it means he can be an integral part of the squad at Arsenal, part of the group, you know? And he seems like a guy just like any of us who, you know, if you told me that's going to be my role, I'd be like, fuck yes. Like that, sure. Whatever's the best for the team. You know, we'd all do that. And we know that he's as committed as any of us could even dream to be in that sense. So I really see him being a vital squad player, and hopefully he can
Jenkinson
fill in
would do anything for Arsenal.
Right. He'll run through walls.
He would suck under Soros' cock for Arsenal. Okay.
Big dinosaurs everywhere.
Yeah.
I thought those they didn't have any. Hey, how was Gunnosaurus at the Emirates and at Wembley? Okay.
Okay. Okay. There was a time machine that only appears when we're playing cup finals. I don't know.
Fuck, man. Are you telling me that he's got a twin brother that's just like hides?
No,
Gunnosaurus has broken the time space.
This is pretty obvious. He had a TARDIS. It's Doctor Who. It's London. Come on.
I know is I saw Alex posting pictures with Gunnosaurus at the Emirates, and then I saw him at Wembley, and it's all coming down. I was shattered. I was like, what? It was like finding out that, you know, about
it's
Santa
all a lie.
Claus.
Gunnosaurus has a twin. He's an orphan black.
You know, I think it would be great one of these days if you had someone like, if Thierry Henry secretly got to, you know, had been at Wembley or something, and you had him actually in Gunnosaurus' outfit, and when they're celebrating,
yeah,
it comes
off.
Thing,
that's the thing. The reason Stuart Robson hates Arsenal so much, they made him dress up in that all the time.
And then Emma just run. He's walking down the tunnel, like you're looking at the Wembley tunnel cam, and they're just kicking him in the ass as he's walking by. I like it. I dig it. I dig it. All right, moving on from that, we'll say who is going to be the breakthrough player of the season next year?
Chamberlain
yeah. From Alex. It's going to be the year of the Chambo, the year of the Ox.
Yeah.
The year of the Ox.
I know, but mostly Chamberlain, I think.
I would say Wilshere, and not just really a breakthrough, but I mean, it'd be a reemergence of, and hopefully getting through his injury problems for the last 2 years.
Okay, moving on.
I want Wilshere to send Scholes hate mail, like fucking write some death threats and shit.
He loves Scholes though.
He shouldn't, but he does. Yeah.
No, of course. Well, of course he. I won't go as far as say he shouldn't. He should. To a certain
fuck
extent.
Fuck Scholes.
If I were English, I'd have a different opinion of him, but I'm not. So yeah, fuck him. But. All right, on to you, Elliot. Who's going to be the breakthrough player next year?
It's a tough call. I want to say Cavani.
yeah.
So I have three I'm torn between. Two of them I don't think you can say. So I want to say Walcott because I think if he has one – he's at that point in his career where if he has one injury-free season – he's just, especially with Ozil in the squad, if they play 38 games together, I think Walcott will destroy the Premier League. I think he will be Sturridge, Sterling season combined and just be unstoppable. I want to say Ozil, but I think when you're picking one of the 10 best players in the world to have a breakout season, it's just stupid. So I'm going to go with Jack Wilshere. I am of the opinion that Ozil aside, Jack Wilshere is the most talented player at Arsenal. I love that player. I think his touch, his technique, his vision, his intelligence on the pitch is incredible. I think what Jack is missing is the discipline, obviously, the fitness. He needs to stay fit. And I think some of that comes with maturity. He's a father now. I think he's growing up a little bit. I think he will mature. I think he will calm down. I think the game will slow down for him. And I just think that I look at the player who was the best player on the pitch against Barcelona, and I know that's the game that everybody harkens back to, but Jack Wilshere can be the difference. I think he can be our Scholes Giggs hybrid for 10 seasons to come. I genuinely believe if he's over his injury problems, we will see a Jack Wilshere who is one of the top five players in the Premier League for the next decade.
I really hope you're right. And I agree with you in a lot of those aspects.
He has the ability to do it.
He has the ability. For me, my biggest question with Jack is mental, because I think the things that have bothered me the most about his game have all been things that outside of his footballing ability, partially the way he throws himself into tackles and stuff, but that's a mental decision of what he does. But also just the way you're able to get him off his game by being physical and doing stuff. I mean, there's just certain, I don't know if it's mental maturity or what you want to call it, but there's certain things that I think he could develop. I'm just not
But you know what will also change, Joaquin? Like I'm going to defend Jack on one thing. Jack gets fouled and it's not called because referees have decided for whatever reason that when he moves the ball just a little too quickly for defenders, they're allowed to clean him out. I mean, he gets the least protection of any player I've ever seen.
For an English player, yeah, that's for damn sure.
Right. Well, that's my point. As he becomes more important for England, as he calms down some of the petulance, as he stops throwing himself to the ground, I think with a little more protection from referees and a little more calmness to his game, technically, he has every trait to be a great, I mean, a legend at the club. And I've had faith in him from day one. I mean, I know I'm someone who occasionally is prone to fits of cynicism, pessimism, skepticism, whatever you want to say.
Right.
When it comes to Jack Wilshere, there is no end to my belief in what he's capable of.
I mean, I've been a huge believer of him since we first started seeing him as like a 16-year-old, and it's been... And we all know the talent's there.
When you first started seeing him, were you dating? Were you official?
Well, you know, we kept it under wraps, but, you know.
He was underage.
He was underage, so we didn't want to shed any light on that. Thanks. Now it's being broadcast all over the internet.
The kids have your eyes.
They do. Have you seen Archie's face? Where do you think he got that smile, man? No. But I'm going to say, like, I really think he can really come on. But, I mean, for him to really take a step forward, it's going to be a – I think he can really do it. I really think he can, but it's going to be a tough task because he has shown like a pretty high level of play before. And so for him to really step forward from that, it's going to take a remarkable amount of consistency and whatnot. I think what we're going to see is I've got a lot of faith in the Ox, and I think he's going to be the more mercurial player that's really going to be more explosive and be more of a game changer for us next season. And so
with those three players that we named, how many signings do we really need?
We still. You want to win the league? You still need two huge signings.
You need a great defensive midfield. You need a great center forward. But the thing is, and I think this is the reason why the Ox has a clearer path to being the breakout player next season. The Ox has a clearer path to playing more football.
Right.
Only in the sense that if we do sign a defensive midfielder, or even if we don't, I don't think anyone, Arsene Wenger included, believes that you can play an Ozil, Ramsey, Wilshere midfield. It's not protecting the back four enough. So if you assume that Arteta holds on to his place and that Ramsey and Ozil are never out of the squad in big games, Wilshere has to do more to be a regular starter, whereas Oxlade-Chamberlain can spell Cazorla on the left wing, he can spell Walcott on the right, he can play in midfield in place of a Ramsey or an Ozil. Wilshere, I think, if he's going to be effective anyway, has to find a way to prove he's worth a start over a Ramsey or an Arteta or an Ozil. Harder to do.
Fair enough. Let's move on to a couple other questions from Brian at Gunner Faithful. He's got a question saying, who is the first name on the team sheet next season? Quickly, Alex.
Awesome, Vengo.
All right, you smug cunt. Now give me your real answer.
Okay.
He's very frail.
Chesney, Gibbs, Perkoz, new right
God
back.
God damn it, I said the first name. One name. Who's the first name on the team sheet?
Oh, I'm so stupid. Okay. So,
All right, moving on. Alex is now out of court. He does not get to answer this question.
The first player on the team sheet, Theo Walcott.
Okay. Joseph?
Well, when he takes your right answer. I think that's just easy because it's going to be Chesney.
Okay. All right. And Elliot?
Ramsey.
Cool. I'll go with Ozil. That was good. Do you see us playing more 4-4-2? Alex, do you see that recurring next season? Or something that we potentially shift to?
When we need to win, yes.
Do you expect to be employed in a similar way it was this year, kind of like as a late tactic change?
I like it. Yeah, I think we should do it more. If it's worked the way it has now, there should be no reason why we shouldn't do that more often.
Elliot?
Absolutely not, and I'll tell you why. As much as I enjoyed it in the FA Cup final when we went to it and it worked, here's the problem, right? So I think we'd all agree. Maybe we won't all agree, so let's see if we all agree. 4-4-2 is not a good choice against the biggest sides in the Premier League or in Europe, right? We all agree on that? Okay.
Yeah,
so here's the irony. We were the best team in the Premier League this entire season against the bottom half of the table. So I could see us playing more 4-4-2 if you accept the argument that we need to do better against the weaker teams, but actually we did spectacularly well against the weaker teams. So the one instant or the one circumstance where I would say 4-4-2 would be in our best interest, which would be against weaker sides, we don't need to improve in that area. Where we need to improve is against the bigger sides, and 4-4-2 is not going to do that for us. So I would say both because of personnel, signings aside, and because of circumstance, I love the way we look when we play 4-4-2, but ultimately because we've been so successful against the smaller teams without having to rely on 4-4-2, I don't see the need to do it more often, and I certainly don't think doing it more with Sanogo is the way to improve an already strong record against those sides.
Right. So quickly, guys, give me three players on your wish list for the summer. If you could have three wishes for Arsene and players he's
outside
of
the club,
magic hat. Yeah, outside of the club. We'll come to you second, Joseph, because it's going to take you a while.
Those players exist.
So we'll stick with you, Elliot. Give me the three players if you can have any three outside of Messi and Ronaldo and whatnot.
Right. By wish list, I'm going to go with they're my dream come true, but could happen as opposed to literally could not happen. So I would say Cavani at center forward. Again, some people would say could not happen, but could happen
within the realm of possibility.
He's potentially on the market and we could potentially afford it. I would say Cavani. I would say Javi Martinez.
Yeah.
And I know I'm kind of defaulting to players we're linked with. Actually, you know what? Screw that. Yeah, my three. How about this? Cavani, Martinez, and Pogba. I'm not. Again, these are wish list. I know that's not happening. If you want to go with happening, I'd say Aurier. Is that how you pronounce it? Aurier. Martinez or Bender, and Cavani with maybe like a Remy Chaser.
I could do a little Remy Chaser. that would work. Let's go to you, Alex.
I think it's going to be someone like Aurier, and we're going to get some really weird backup goalkeeper. And
if those are going to happen, that's great. But what is your dream list? And that's within the realm of possibility.
That's my dream.
Okay, your dream is that we actually just still sign these small. Right.
You don't do the fantasy thing very well.
Oh, he does. He just burned.
It just burned. I think Elliot's list is just fine. Cavani and Ben Martinez would be fantastic because he can play a centre back as well.
Yeah.
You know, and he would be so useful for our team. If we get Vela back, then what fantasy winger would I want? I would want Sanchez or Pedro. And I would love to have one of those two. And name me a very good right back that we can buy. You know, it's a wish list. I want Zabaleta. Sanya can go to City. We'll have a swap.
Fair enough. I like that. All right, let's move on to you, Joseph. Give me your wish list of players outside the club. I know it's so difficult to fathom.
This really actually was kind of difficult. But since we're talking fantasy, Pogba is a fantasy player for me. And I guess we're still talking about needs, or does it matter?
No, nothing, I mean, whatever you want.
Nothing matters.
Nothing matters. Okay.
These are wishes, okay? Well, wish in one hand and shit in the other.
I like...
These could be three players that are all targets, and it would only be, and even if only one of them could be signed, but just three players you would love to see in an Arsenal
from Atletico Madrid, Turan, because I love that guy's toughness.
Interesting.
So I don't have three, but I have two. Those are my two.
Those are your two.
That's all I could come up with.
That's all you could come up with, huh? All right.
I would like somebody really approaching the speed of Theo to match that on the other side. I'm just going to claim the ignorance that I don't know who that player is.
He's
playing at Roma.
What about Draxler? Nobody's mentioning him.
I'm going to go with, because of what I think is a little bit more realistic for this summer. You know, I'm a Royce over Draxler fan, but I don't think Royce is going anywhere this season.
He said
he's not going anywhere, and he's got a £35 million release clause kicking in next summer. So I think it's going to be open warfare next summer over him. So I don't think it's going to happen this year. So I will leave him off, even though he's near the top of my dream list. I just really don't.
He's at the top of your list. Come on.
He's worth doing dirty things for.
I would probably do some dirty things I wouldn't want anyone to hear about. So outside of that, I'm going to go with, I really would love a signing like Javi Martinez. It just would be so huge for our team. Pog was another one on my dream list. But I'll stick with something a little more realistic. Javi Martinez, Edinson Cavani. I'm a huge fan of El Matador. And just those Uruguayan players are tough as nails. All of them. Even the spindly ones like him are wiry and strong as fuck. And they're all nasty bastards from top to bottom. No one wants to play against Uruguayans. No one's going to want to play against them in the World Cup. So go figure. So that's those two. And I'm going to go with Alexis Sanchez because, my dream is you put Royce on the left, but if you got to give me someone else, there's interchangeability in that. And, like, apparently Barca are willing to listen to offers for him. So if he's a guy who could be available, fuck it. Sign him up because he is the shit. And he's a very good player.
Wait, I thought of my third.
All right. What's your third?
Ibrahimovic is my third.
Zlatan. Okay. That's a fair dreamland one. I like it.
Down the club.
With a trophy, with a league title, though.
Yeah, exactly. You'd win the league. He always wins the league.
Gosh. And then the Emirates would burn afterwards. Okay.
I'm sure it's covered by insurance.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, sure. you know who you could have said, Joseph? What about your boy, Lucas Moura? You don't want that guy? Or you don't like him being compared to Theo?
Yeah, I don't like any of that. There's really
how he's not in the Brazil team just blows my mind.
That's one that's hard for me to fathom. I mean, even a little bit of form being off and not playing as much, that kid's just got so much talent and pace that it's just it's hard for me to. I know Bernard is good, but like, how do you take a couple of these players that are included instead just were tough for me. But I'm sure they'll do just fine. Anyways, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. A season that promised a lot and delivered in some senses. You know, it certainly was really great to get the monkey off our back and, you know, get across the line in terms of finishing with an FA Cup. Do you guys consider the season a success now that that's happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. In a perfect Ozil impression. For a second, I thought that was a video. I was like, is he playing that clip? That was pretty good, Alex. That was decent. Elliot, are you happy? Are you satisfied?
I'm very happy right now.
You're very happy right now.
I think any season where you lose, 5-1, 6-0, 6-3, 4, I mean, any season where you have those losses, you can't walk away from the season and say everything's perfect unless you won the treble. I mean, you don't want to lose to your rivals that way, but I think winning three North London derbies, winning a cup, finishing top four, spending 120 days or whatever it was, 128 days, whatever it was, at the top of the table, I think I have to acknowledge that despite feeling really down about the way our title challenge collapsed, it's progress. It's not the groundhog season. It's the end of that groundhog season that we've kind of gone through. I couldn't be happier to see what looks like progress, and my only wish would now be, all right, Arsene, you got three more years. You have a trophy back. You got your mojo back. We're making progress. Don't let this be the new level. Let's go up one more level. Let's be ambitious this summer. Get the couple things we really need, and let's really show that we have even more. And I think the players are ready to respond. So yes, I'm very, very happy right now. I will be more happy if we take the next step from here.
Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I'm I thought that this finish, the top four and a cup, was kind of what we hoped for. I when the yellow kit was announced, I said that was a cup winning kit. I was hoping we'd wear it that day, but red and white's always nice.
It'll suffice.
One point I'd like to make is that for all the people that first that maybe wouldn't have minded Liverpool winning, as horrible and as gloaty and as wonderful as we've been for the last couple of days, just remind yourself that you never want that lot to win because they're so much worse. So I'm really happy. I've been singing a Ramsey song all since Sunday to myself, all over the house, all over work. It's in my head. It's been great. So I'm very happy.
And on to you, Alex.
I just want to echo what all of you guys are saying. Like it was really important that we won the FA Cup and not the Carling Cup this season, because winning it late after our challenge faltered, winning it, like finishing the season on a high, like it was such a euphoric high as well. It wouldn't have been the same feeling if we had just won the Carling Cup and not the FA Cup.
Very true.
So it does make you like understand that the FA Cup is more important than the Carling Cup by quite a bit. And
well, yeah, it's a viable trophy. It is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a second tier competition.
Well, and it comes at the very end of the season. I think Alex's point is an important one. The worst part of our season was, you know, March, April. And so, you know, or February, March, you know, whatever it proved to be. And I think in a situation where we had won the Carling Cup, but then our title challenge collapsed, we would have ended with that being our lasting takeaway. Our lasting takeaway from this season is winning the FA Cup. So I think Alex's point is really important. We, I mean us, the fans, the manager, the players, get to go off in the summer feeling really good about where we are as a club and really excited to take another step.
Yeah, and it was so dramatic the way we won it, and it showed a lot about our team. And hopefully this will encourage other players to join us. They know how much, and they saw the football we played throughout the season, you know. And most of the professionals know about our injuries, that they had a huge effect on our season. And so I'm hoping that we'll attract the best players we can this summer.
You know what, Alex? I think just one thing really quickly, because I think this makes up another really good point that you're kind of bringing up, is that, like, this is why winning a trophy is so important in a way, too, right? Like, if you go online at any given time over the last few years to Twitter or reading articles from the media or whatever, like, some people think top four is good enough, some people don't. There's a lot of infighting, manager in, manager out, all that stuff. The cool thing about a trophy is a trophy is not philosophical in nature. It's, you know what I mean? It is a tangible success. Top four is a philosophical success. Winning a trophy is a tangible success. And so what I found, like, I know that, like, in seasons past, I've read every, like, season review article and every newspaper around the world and listened to every podcast wanting validation for what we achieved. I didn't need validation for the FA Cup. It was its own validation. I celebrated it as much as I could. It brought me huge joy. And this is why trophies are so important and why winning tangible things is so important. It unites the fans. It unites the team. It transcends interpretation, because I don't care if a Chelsea fan thinks it's just the FA Cup or if some dumb journalist said, oh, well, we were down 2-0, so it doesn't count. It's tangible. It's tangible success, and there's no need to interpret it. We have that trophy. You know, it's real.
And I'm happy this year ended up giving us something that we've really been waiting much too long for, and hopefully we can build on that. You know, this, we'll see how the summer pans out. It'd be wonderful if we could see a signing before the World Cup, but I'm not going to hold my breath. It's going to be an enjoyable summer, though.
We're going to get Vela before the World Cup, probably.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll take it gladly. Some of you guys don't really want that, but he was legitimately the team of the season in La Liga last year, and in some teams of the season, although he wouldn't make mine for La Liga this season. So, yeah, man, it's a good bit of business. So we'll see if that happens. And that's pretty close to promoting from within, Joseph, you know, spending 1 million, you know.
He's a homegrown.
So, yeah, exactly. He will count towards our homegrown, I believe, if we bring him in since we got him young.
We're fine on homegrown now.
Oh, you just now you don't want him because he's Mexican, huh? This motherfucker. This guy. On that point, I want to give a special congratulations to Atletico Madrid for making the La Liga so exciting this year because they won the league and almost single-handedly. I mean, they really – you have to give credit to La Liga in general being much more entertaining than it has been some years, more bottom sides really standing up and really performing on the occasion. But the La Liga title race was actually ended up being better than the Premier Leagues, and they were both very good this season, but the league really showed its caliber this year. So congratulations to Atletico and to a good La Liga season. Quickly before we go, guys, can you give me your prediction for the final at the weekend? Who's going to win, Atletico or Real? Go with you, Joseph.
Madrid wins 3-1.
Madrid.
I didn't want to say which one, but okay, if you're going to make me choose, yes. Real Madrid wins 3-1.
All right, Elliot?
You know, there's something about Atletico this season, but the injuries, I think, are too much. Without Costa and Turan, I don't see they can get over the hump. So I think it's La Decima for Real Madrid.
And Alex?
Ronaldo has been posing in naked pictures in Vogue. So I think he's going to come back and he's going to blow everyone away again.
It pains me to say it, but I tend to side with you guys. I think the injuries are a bit too much. I don't know if Arda's going to be fit. I think he's more likely to be fit than – there's no way Diego Costa's fit. You see him pull up while trying to attempt a sprint. That's not better in 5 or 6 days or 7 days, whatever it's going to be.
The thing is, it almost felt like Madrid were only fighting for the Champions League at some point, you know? That's what it felt like the last couple of weeks.
Well, once they fucked up again a couple of weeks ago, once it was out of their own hands, they're like, "Oh, fuck it, like we're over it," and they completely did because that's all that they've won plenty of league titles since the 9th European Championship they had. So
that's the funny thing is that's the sort of quiet joy that this season brought us. Not only did we win a trophy and we had some general progress, Spurs were a laughingstock for huge stretches of the season. Manchester United were a tire fire. Barcelona really turned into a dumpster fire.
Thank God they didn't win the league, right? I mean, they did not deserve it. I mean,
No, they were horrible. But it's just funny because like a lot of the teams that we have general antipathy towards, Chelsea, I mean, you know, for all the positive
things. Chelsea not winning a trophy with everyone picks, swinging from Mourinho's nuts when he came back, he's going to come back and lead Chelsea to glory.
All our worst enemies imploded. And I mean, if it wasn't going to be us winning the league, Liverpool hilariously collapsing, Chelsea losing it against small sides, Barcelona unraveling, United and Spurs being laughingstocks, like outside of our season, you couldn't have picked a much better season for the non-Arsenal teams to have.
Yeah, it was a nice narrative for those of us, especially with our particular affinities. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very enjoyable. And let there be many more seasons like that where our foes will continue to flounder and we shall gloriously rejoice. I mean, Saturday was a fantastic day. Atletico won the league and Arsenal won the FA Cup. It was the only way it could have gotten better was if Dortmund had beaten Munich. But, you can't win them all. You can't win them all. But it's been a really fun season this year, though. It's really good to end it with, on a high note like this and just have something really great to celebrate. With the Champions League, I think this may be too tall of a task for Atletico with these injuries. But, never count them out. But if you maybe put my money on it, I'd put your money on Real Madrid. It seems like going to be too much to handle. But you never know. I mean, this plucky Atletico side has been able to, win a dogfight.
It's going to be a dirty final.
Absolutely. And you look at the way they fought, even without those players, like without Arda. And they got this result. They came from behind without Arda and without Diego Costa. And that's something, at least without Diego Costa, they're going to have to get used to for next season. So, never rule them out. But money, if there's money on the line, I'd back Real. So that's going to be it for us for now. From here on out, this is probably going to be the last Pintcast for a while. I might speak with a Madridista later this week to preview the Cup final, but that's still uncertain. We will be doing a project for the World Cup. All of these fellows here will be joining me in one capacity or another. Alex will be making his way to Los Angeles pretty soon to join me for a while, and we're going to be covering the World Cup on the Red Card District. So there will be a new website that is under construction at the moment. That's the redcarddistrict.com. There's a Twitter that's up, but it's, you know, I'm not really tweeting from it yet, but that's the redcarddist, at redcarddist. And, it'll be up. There's going to be a comprehensive preview of all of the teams from the World Cup, as well as podcast previews in the weeks to follow leading up to the tournament, breaking down all the different groups. So please, get at us and join us there. For those of you who subscribe to the Pintcast and do everything through the same, you know, through iTunes and whatnot, all those podcasts will appear on the same feed. So even though I'll be posting them on a different website on the redcarddistrict.com, if you subscribe to the Pintcast already or have it with the RSS feed and stuff, like, it'll all still work smoothly and you will get them updated just as they were. They will be titled differently, obviously. And we're still have room for a couple writers. So if there are a few teams, still available to write for, if anyone wants to contribute to that, you can send emails to redcarddistrict@gmail.com and or just hit me up on Twitter and we'll see what is available. And we can look forward to a lot of fun in the summer. And gentlemen, I hope you enjoy your break from Arsenal and we can all yell at each other all the, you know, during the World Cup for all sorts of different reasons and have
what,
some fun.
What break?
There is no break from Arsenal. There is no break from Arsenal. But we're going to be talking about international football.
This is the period of the year I like to call refreshing news now.
Oh, God. Like, I'm actually kind of glad that, like, you don't have to do it anymore because of Twitter. Like, I remember that. It wasn't that long ago. Yeah. It was just news now, refresh. That's not that far long ago, right?
No.
Yeah. It's been crazy.
I'll see you all in Indy Kalia's mentions or whatever.
Right.
I missed something there. We will we'll leave it at that. But it's been a pleasure, gentlemen, as always. A wonderful season for us as supporters, and it's been exciting. So we'll be back soon, and hopefully we'll be have more glorious things to talk about and wonderful signings once the Pintcast returns towards the end of summer. All right. So for all of these fine gentlemen, you can catch them all on their Twitters and whatnot. I don't need to state them all again. And we will have a glorious summer with some fun World Cup action coming to you from Brazil. So until then, bye guys.
Bye.
Cheers.
Insanity locks under pressure, we're breaking. Can we give ourselves one more chance? pressure. Under pressure. Pressure.